Back everyone to our second Mathphysics seminar of the fall. Our speaker today is Laura Shepwasnik of the University of Illinois at Chicago, and we'll hear about generalized hyperpolygon spaces and more.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben, and thank you, David, for inviting me to your seminar series. What I'd like to tell you today about is some work that I've done with Steve Ryan that we finished recently on hyperpolygon spaces and their relation to my previous work on brains of Hitching systems. So our generalized hyperpolygons are defined through a special type of quivers, which we introduced last year. And we kept working in this area. So time permitting, I want to tell you about the beginning of our current projects on the topic, applications of hyperpolygons to math physics, and some other projects I've been thinking about in terms of applications of mathematics to other areas of science. So I thought I should take this opportunity for that. So let me show you, there we go, what the plan for today is. First, I want to introduce the main objects of the talk. And these are generalized hyperpolygons. And for these, we're going to review some useful ideas related to quiver varieties. And then I want to consider the relationship between Higgs bundles and Hitching systems and quiver varieties, since this is one of the original inspirations that took me to work on hyperpolygons. We will then look at into the appearance of integrable systems within the space of generalized hyperpolygons. And once we have a similar setup to that of Hitching systems, we're going to look into the study of brains, both of Higgs bundles and hyperpolygon spaces, by considering the correspondence within the hyperkähler setup. And finally, time permitting, I'd like to tell you a bit more about some other projects I've been thinking about in last year. Again, with views of applying geometric intuition into other areas of science. In particular, since this has really kept me going during the pandemic, so I wanted to share the experience. So the papers I'm going to be using today are the following. The main papers are written with Steve Ryan. They were published last year. On the left, you see the paper where we define generalized hyperpolygons, which we prepared to honor the memory of Sir Michael Atiyah. We then published this year a note on hyperpolygons in the notices of the AMS, and there you can find the very basic ideas to follow the topic. And for further open questions in the area, both of hyperpolygons and Hitching systems, you can look at my recent article on the notices of the AMS, where I discussed 10 different paths of applications that I've been thinking about. So let me start then by telling you about hyperpolygon spaces. Even though there are so many experts here in the area, and sorry if any of you have heard these things before, I want to make sure we're all on the same page, and so I want to start with some details on quiver variety. The Mondlane space of hyperpolygons appears as the Nakajima quiver variety of the star-shaped quivers. And since we'll be using a similar construction when considering hyperpolygons, we're going to do a quick recap of how these varieties are built. So take the quiver A1, which has two vertices, like you see here. I'm going to call them U and V, and I'm going to put labels RU and RV. Its space of representations is then defined as the homomorphisms between C to the RU and C to the RV, and I call it this V here. Considering the corresponding Nakajima quiver, we can now double the arrows and interpret the space of representations as the cotangent space to those homomorphisms. And this can be viewed as the direct sum of two spaces of homomorphisms between the copies of C, parametrizing the two arrows, where we think of the reverse direction Y as being a cotangent direction. And to construct the corresponding moduli spaces, we need to do a symplectic reduction, which will be then used equivalently to do the reduction for generalized hyperpolygons. So let's take a look at how that is done. For the symplectic reduction to each quiver, we're going to associate a real and a complex movement map, mu and u, that take the space of representations of the double quiver to the dual of the Lie algebra and to its complexification. These movement maps are associated with the complex adjoint action of a group G built from the action of groups on each of the nodes. And this is how we're going to do it. On a non-central node B, we're going to have the action of U of R V acting by left or right multiplication. And on the central node, we have the action of SUR. Because we're going to define them node by node, we can build these maps over a whole quiver in a natural way by looking at the small pieces of the quiver. So I want to take a look at an example of how this works. To understand these moment maps, let's consider this example of the two-node quiver just like before. In this case, the real moment map on XY is the difference between X star X and YY star, where the asterisk the star means the conjugate transpose. And we can pretend it lives in the correct Lie algebra by scaling it appropriately. And the complex moment map is just the product of X, Y, like you see here. So let's now look at the Nakajima quiver varieties for quivers and for our hyperpolygons basis. The Nakajima quiver variety of a quiver can then be constructed through these moment maps and is an affine hyperKato variety that we get in the following way. So given a quiver Q, which is not yet doubled, we first consider the quotient of its space of representations by the group G, which is the product of GLRV for each of the nodes B. And then to get the Nakajima quiver variety, we restrict the dual of the representation variety to the intersection of the two level sets obtained via the moment maps to get the hyperKato quotient. And these moment maps are as they appear here in blue on the bottom. Now, our group is now taken to be the product of the maximal compacts for each vertex. We're taking the level set of the real moment map for the central element alpha and the level set of the complex moment map at zero. And this space has very nice geometry from work of Hitchin, Caldit, Lindstone, and Roark. The space has a hyperKato structure where the complex structure I comes from U and J and K come from mu. And this is the space that's equivalent to what we're going to be building. So to start talking about generalized hyperpolygons, we need to start considering the examples that are going to lead us to generalized hyperpolygons. Hyperpolygons are built out of, so without the generalization, hyperpolygons themselves are built from A-type quivers. And so we're going to look at this simple case first of a flat variety that comes from choosing an A-type quiver with M nodes, as we have here, with labels 1 and R and integers in between in increasing order, those that I put there. The Nakajima quiver variety then is given by the dual of the partial flat variety. And here we're considering the underlying R as the vector of labels of our quiver and thus integers between 1 and R. The groups in question that we have here on the bottom right are used for building the moment maps. And in this case, our G, which is the product of URIs for vertex quotiented by plus or minus 1, but not the one on the of the biggest or highest label R. And also the center, which is the sum of the duals of the Lie algebras for the non-central nodes. So for our moment map, we will consider the level set for which we have here. Let me just take a look and look at what we want to build here. So we're going to look at moment maps that come from alphas and zeros. Let me just put here. We're going to take all the nodes except for the central one, and we're going to take all of them to be zero except for the node with a one, and that's going to be assigned an alpha. This also has a UR action, like we see here at the central node with complex moment map mu, and this is given by the product of the two arrows to and from the node with nilpotent image. So we can use this analysis to understand the star-shaped quiver because we're going to be putting all of these A-type quivers together at the central node. And then we're going to look at generalized hyperpolygons where we're going to add loops. The key idea here is we're going to build these very particular quivers by putting many A-star quivers of different lengths and then start putting loops, which will correspond to considering Riemann surfaces which with higher genus. So this is where we're going. So let's take a look at hyperpolygons first. We mentioned before that hyperpolygon spaces arise as the representation of star-shaped quivers, and these are built, like we were saying, by putting many n-type quivers of different length, not necessarily the same flag, joined together at the central node, to which we are going to usually label with R. And to build a space of generalized hyperpolygons, we need to first add g many loops to obtain a comet. So I'm going to add the g many loops here. And we're then going to consider its double quiver with double arrows. And at the center node, we're going to restrict to the SUR action. We're going to fix here the labels just as we did before, and choices of the alpha i's for each of the nodes, which has a one, which can be considered as the hyperkähler parameters. So now we have there, you see in red, your alpha ones, alpha twos, alpha n for each of these n A-type quivers that we have. And then we're going to define the Nakajima quiver variety of the comet as the product of the dual space of the flag varieties for each arm together with the cotangent space coming from the nodes quotiented by the action of SUR. The loops come from SLRC, and there is G of them. And so we're going to take the cotangent space since we have doubled them. This is what you see here. The equation is going to be taken via the Merman maps as before by considering the level set at zero, as well as that of the parameter alpha, which are enclosed in the partial flag varieties. And a key point here is to understand how do we build these Merman maps. Before we had them, now one of the key things we had to do with Steve was to understand how do we build these Merman maps. So to construct the appropriate Merman maps, which will lead to an appropriate moduli space with good geometric conditions, it is useful to understand how the loops of the comet contribute to the action. We're going to just look at one particular subpart of our comet so that we can understand these moment maps. At the central node, we're going to call it star, we have n arms indexed by I and g loops indexed by j. And one can express the moment map in the following way, like you see here in the slide. We're going to suppress the indices for x and y and only leave the I, since the central node only directly interacts with the first node of each arm. So we don't care at this stage how long this arm is. Now the real Merman map mu at star is the sum of the real Merman maps at each of the arms summed to the commutators of a loop arrow and its reverse one for all of the loops at the central node. And we should note that we're taking the traceless part of this, and that's why we put a zero there. The complex Merman map now is the sum of the complex Merman maps for that node at each of the arms summed by the commutators of each loop arrow, and it's doubled. And so the generalized hyperpolygon space is then constructed through the level sets at zero of the corresponding complex and real Merman maps, modding out by the SUR action. So it can be shown to be a hyperkähler variety of complex dimension 2 times the sum of the dimensions of the flag varieties plus g minus 1 times r square minus 1. So for those working on representation varieties, when all these flags are complete, we're going to recover the expected dimension of nr r minus 1 plus 2g minus 1 r square minus 1, like you see here in pilot. So why do we call them hyperpolygons or polygon spaces? I just want to make a quick comment saying that geometrically, we can think of the space of generalized hyperpolygons as parametrizing pairs of polygons whose sides have lengths determined by those values of the Merman map, and these being those of analogy to polygon space. In particular, since we're working arbitrary genus now, since we have the loops from the generalization, we have a 2n plus 2 g-gon and an n plus g-gon, like you see here. Hyperpolygon spaces, we mentioned before, are spaces that have hyperkähler structures. So let me tell you a bit more about these spaces. The space X, we're going to call it X to the G sub R of alpha, is the moduli space of generalized hyperpolygons of length alpha. Hyperpolygons were first studied by Kotto as a natural hypercator extension of the usual polygon space, and later on by Harrod and Bradford as a Nakajima queer variety in more detail. These spaces are closely related to Higgs bundles, as was first seen for genus 0 by Godinho Mandini for rank 2, and this was later extended to any rank by Fisher and Ryan when you have minimal flags. So with Steve Ryan, we wanted to understand further cases of Hitching systems that could be modeled through hyperpolygons, and we consider hence surfaces of arbitrary genus and hyperpolygons and generalized hyperpolygons with any type of flags. And this is what I want to tell you more about today. So how do we relate these hyperpolygons or generalized hyperpolygons to Hitching systems? Remember that Nakajima queer varieties can be thought of as a finite dimensional analog of Hitching systems. And to see this, recall that Hitching's equations express both the flatness of an SLNC connection and the harmonicity condition for a metric resulting on a flat band. So in a particular, this can be seen from two equations we had obtained via the real and complex moment maps. I want to show you how to modify these equations to see the spirit of Hitching's equations appearing here. So recall that we have these two moment maps equations for which we consider the zero level set. So we can reorder and see the following. I'm going to reorder them like this, and we're going to see the failure of a polygon to close as being corrected by the choices we make for the extension data. And this is very similar to Hitching's first equation, where the failure of the curvature to vanish for the connection is measured by the choice of the Higgs field phi. So now we have a connection part and a Higgs field part in the first hyperpolygon hyperpolygon equation. So we see in the second equation the connection part acting on the cotangent data, and thus leading to an analog of Hitching's second equation of holomorphicity. So we're starting to get Higgs bundles, or the hint of Higgs bundles appearing here. I want to tell you how to see them more precisely. The way we associate a corresponding Higgs field to a hyperpolygon is by considering a punctured surface. So let D be a positive divisor in the upper half plane tiled with punctured 4G gons that you see here. Then we will use the X and the Y data to define the residues of the Higgs field, which now is a meromorphic, is made of meromorphic functions at this point. So choosing the GZ of ZI appropriately as a quasi-periodic function, we can see that the quotient is well-defined on the quotient of the upper half-plane by the appropriate Fuchsian group. And these Higgs fields that you see here, these phi of Z, these are Higgs fields for the trivial rank R bundle on those surfaces. And we compactified before, we take the quotient, so we get a compact Riemann surface. We should know that this is an embedding, so this correspondence respects the complex structure I, but doesn't respect the complex structure J's and K's. So really it's not an embedding of hybrid Kähler spaces, but rather of these complex varieties. So let's look at an example of something that you might have seen before. Let's take a look at the example of hyperpolygons with minimal flags and genus zero, and in particular, this one coming from the thinking diagram D4, which has minimal flags. So 1, 2 are the labels for all arms, and so they have minimal and complete flags. Then the affine D4 thinking diagram with flag 1, 2 for this case has a modeled space of hyperpolygons as a K3 surface with complete ALE metric. It's actually gravitational instantons. It embeds into the Hitching system of parabolic Higgs bundles of rank 2 on P1 with 4 punctures, giving 4 tame singularities to the Higgs field. And the embedding is not of hyperkähler varieties, like we were saying. The difference between the two spaces is a codimension 0 subvariety, which is actually a Hitching section, putting us in close contact with the Hitching integrable system. The difference in the hyperkähler structure is measured really by the metric in the space. So for alpha equal to 0, which is non-generic, you get a symplectic singularity. So we're close, getting close to integrable systems, and this is what I want to tell you next. I want to tell you about how integrable systems can be thought of through hyperpolygon spaces. So, given the correspondence between generalized hyperpolygons and Higgs bundles, we look into the appearance of integrable systems, which would be analog to the Hitching fibration. We should really keep in mind that back in 94, Nakajima mentioned in his work that one would expect Nakajima-Kriya varieties to be completely integrable Hamiltonian systems. Fischer and Ryan showed that this is the case for hyperpolygons on genus zero surfaces and minimal flags for rank equal or less than three and any arm n. So they did this by embedding the space of hyperpolygons into spaces of tame Higgs bundles on the puncture sphere. And we can now extend this to hyperpolygons where comets have complete or minimal flags, and where we take any R, any G, and any R, N. So we're taking a much more general setup, and in particular, we're looking at Riemann surfaces with any genus. And this is how we construct the spaces. Recall that the space of generalized hyperpolygons is obtained by taking the product of flag varieties and a quotient and a restriction via moment mass. The quotient can be seen to inherit the symplectic structure from the original product, but one wants to see if the hyperkähler structure also descends. In other words, we know that the flag varieties are integrable systems of Gelfand-Tilson type, and the component coming from the loops gives an integrable system of Le Poisson type. So we want to ask whether all these integrable systems descend to the quotient. And to study this, we want to see the appearance of the right number of invariants. So we're going to consider generalized hyperpolygons with C complete arms and N minus C minimal arms. This is arms which have labels 1R. We're only going to take complete and minimal arms. Within the complete arms, the kth arrows give us k by k blocks, each contributing k invariants. These are Hamiltonians for the Gelfand-Tilson type systems. So let me tell you how all of these invariants arise through our setup. The invariants are the following. We can see that from the Gelfand-Tilson type integrable system, giving complete flags, we have 1 plus 2 plus R invariants, and so multiplying by the number of complete flags that we had, which is C, we get C times R minus 1, R over 2. And these are the invariants from Gelfand-Tilson type. From the minimal flags, we have R minus 1 invariants multiplied by the number of minimal flags, which is N minus C. And finally, from the loops, we have G times R squared minus 1, since they are in SLRC. So here you have the hyperpolygon to remind yourself. And what we have then is for each choice of R, N, G, and C, we can show that the hyperkähler reduction by the SUR action fixes the number, let's call it N, of R, N, G, C, of invariants. And we can show that using normal forms for the matrices appearing the central node, this number is the number that we like. It gives us half the dimension. So once we subtract those number of invariants to the total number of invariants we get half the dimension of hyperpolygon space, leading to one of our main theorems that you see here, that the space XG sub R of alpha is a completely integrable Hamiltonian system of Gelfand-Tilson type. So why do we like this in particular? What is interesting of this integrable system is that it shows the existence of sub-integrable systems within meromorphic Hitching systems, which do not see the complex geometry of the algebraic curve. This is something that should lead to new understanding of the whole space of meromorphic Hitching systems, since it's purely representation theoretic construction of sub-integrable systems. Remember, you usually to see the Hitching fibration, you need to go to your the complex structure of your curve. You need to look at the differentials associated to Higgs field, et cetera. In this case, we're not doing any of that. And moreover, because we have a hyperkähler structure, we may consider the appearance of Lagrangians or complex holomorphic subvarieties within these integrable systems. And this is what leads us to considering the brains of hyperpolygons. And I wanted to take this opportunity to tell you about brains both of hyperpolygons and of he expands us on the type of questions that we can ask and we can try to answer. So most of you will have heard of these things before, but let me do a very quick recap. Remember that given a hybridicator variety with quaternionic structure, we can fix I, J, and K, three complex structures, and consider the corresponding symplectic forms, omega I, omega J, omega K. And we can consider compatibility of sub-varieties with those structures. So borrowing the terminology of string theory, but simplifying it a bit, we are going to consider the following. We're going to say that a complex sub-variety with respect to one of the complex structures is a B-brain, and a Lagrangian sub-variety with respect to one of the symplectic forms is an A-brain. Remember, A-brains are with A, Lagrangians are with A. If you haven't seen this before, then you should remember the A's go together. When considering the whole hyperkähler space, as the generalized hyperpolygon space is one of the settings, one may find triples of brains of different types. And these are the ABA, AAB, BAA, and BBB brains. This is what we call with Steve Ryan triple brains. And the order here of the letters corresponds to the order previously set of I, J, and K. So there are a few questions that I like asking when I think of brains within both hyperpolygon space and Higgs bundles, and this is what I want to tell you before we move on to some examples. Once you have your hyperkähler space, in this case, let's think of the hyperkähler space given by the modular space of Higgs bundles for some fixed group, say GC, I want to look at the Hitching vibration or the integrable system that we have. And given this vibration or integrable system, I'm interested in constructing families of brains of Higgs bundles, in understanding how these brains lie within the integrable system itself, and understanding how these brains relate to representation theory. Remember Hitching systems, as much as we were talking in terms of hyperpolygons, to they relate to representations of the fundamental group of the Riemann surface, the underlying Riemann surface. Moreover, we have, in this particular case of Hitching systems, we have Langlands duality and SYZ's conjecture. So I'm interested in seeing what the dual objects to those brains we may define are, and which other brains one may be able to build that I've put here underneath as an M in violet, which other brains can we build which presents some kind of duality which is not mirror symmetry. And it's along these lines that with Steve Bradlow, we've considered in the last few years isogenies for Hitching systems, and this allowed us to see dualities between brains of the same type, which is something that doesn't happen mostly in the setup of mirror symmetry. And also when considering how all these brains behave within your hyperkähler structure and your integrable system, if you have a vibration and your integrable system has singular fibers, as is the case of Hitching systems, I'm interested in understanding what happens with these singular fibers in the vibration, not only in terms of what Langlands duality means for those fibers, but also in terms of the brains. So how can one construct brains which completely lie or are completely contained within those fibers, how those brains may be abelianized, and what representations they correspond to. For Higgs bundles, let me tell you a little bit more about these brains to finish off the talk. Let me tell you a bit more about brains for both Higgs bundles and for hyperpolygons. So for Higgs bundles without punctures, brains were first considered by Kapustin and Witten back in 2006 in their electromagnetic duality paper, and they were looking at sigma models. And later, together with David Baraglia back in 2013 and 14, we consider the construction of brains within Higgs bundles through involutions, and with Sebastian Heller more recently in the last years, through finite group actions. And this is something that we're going to try and emulate in other setups, so I want to tell you a bit more about it. Let me tell you a bit about these four types of brains within Higgs bundles, and then I'll move on to hyperpolygons. The way that we have understood these brains is the following. The key idea for us to build these brains was by considering symmetries imposed to the Hitchin system itself. So we're going to impose symmetries to the whole theory that we have. The symmetries that we're going to impose are based on what we are starting with, since we have a complex Higgs bundle on a complex Riemann surface. There are several structures we can impose in order to build the families of primes. So what we decide to impose is first a real structure F on the Riemann surface, which is an anti-holomorphic involution, which if it has fixed points, those fixed points are circles within the surface. This structure has two invariants, which are given by the number of such circles, as well as whether the circles divide the surface into two or not. This is the setup that we were studying with David Baraglia. Then we can also add a real structure in the complex group, an anti-holomorphic involution, which fixes the real form of the group. We're most interested in the cases where this is a non-compact form, because this brings more interesting scenarios. And this leads to real Higgs bundles, which is what I started looking a while back, and we continue with David. And these are the real Higgs bundles that appear as brains back in the work of Kapustin and Wittenen, which were defined by Hitchin back in 92, when he was speaking at Techmuller spaces. And finally, we can also add, and what we did add, it was a final group action on the surface, and we can consider equivariant representations. This is what we studied with Sebastian Heller. And this is what we extended with this one. So let me tell you a bit about the brains that you form in each of the cases. What we're doing is by looking at the induced action of those involutions on the whole moduli spaces of complex Higgs bundles, we can define invariant subspaces which give brains of all possible types. And the methods we develop here were later extended to different setups. For instance, they were extended to frame instanton Higgs bundles on K3s and quiver varieties. Let me tell you which type each of these things gives you. With a real structure on the surface with David Baraglia, we show that one obtains a real integrable system given by an ABA brain, actually related to three manifolds. So I'll tell you more about this in a minute. With a real structure on the group, one has BAA brains of the type originally considered as brains by Kapustin and Wittenen, given by those Higgs bundles appearing in the Techmuller work of Hitchin back in 92. And we further studied these brains and their abelianization and non-abelianization, seeing some interesting features for different groups, and also proposing what Langlands dual brains should be using Nadler's group. And this is what we did with David Baraglia. When mixing both real structures on the group and on the surface, we obtained AAB brains, which bring back what's known as pseudo-real Higgs bundles. And we showed that these also give real integrable systems, just as in the case of ABA brains. And finally, when considering equivariant Higgs bundles on their finite group actions with Sebastian Heller, we saw that we always get BBB brains. And in certain cases, we're able to describe the fibered a BBB brain as a vibration of prime varieties. So let me just mention, give you a hint of the type of results that we're looking for when considering these brains. I mentioned these can be extended. And this is the type of thing that we want to ask. We want to understand the relation between these brains and representation theory. And so there's a question that many people have asked concerning three manifolds whose boundary is the Riemann surface, which is, which representations extend from the fundamental group of the Riemann surface to the fundamental group of the three-manifold. And within our setup, we're going to consider a three-manifold bounding our Riemann surface, which is obtained by taking the product of your Riemann surface with the interval minus 1, 1, and then quotienting by an action that takes t to minus t and x to f of x using our real structure f. In such way, we're going to obtain a three-manifold naturally bounding the Riemann surface that we call sigma originally, and many familiar three-manifolds can be actually obtained in this way. So it's a nice setup to start with. In such setting, those Higgs bundles that belong to our ABA brain, so which are in this invariant subspace, they are preserved by the induced involution of the real structure F on the moduli space of Higgs bundles. And so over the fixed circles of this real structure, they are sent to themselves. In other words, this means that for each fixed circle, there is a choice of plus or minus one for each dimension of our vector bundle. And so this defines the twisted K3 class of our bundle E, which is what we need for understanding classes that extend. So one of our theorems with David Baraglia in along this area is the following, that representations that extend within this setup are those corresponding to Higgs bundles in our ABA brain, coming from the real structure F, for which the twisted K-theoretic class is trivial. And so it allows us to have a very clean way of knowing which representations extend. So to finish off, I want to tell you about hyperpolygons a bit more. So having seen the constructions of brains done for Hitchin systems and the type of questions we ask within that setup, we now want to ask similar things for generalized hyperpolygons. So which type of brains can we build within space of generalized hyperpolygons? What are their dual spaces via mirror symmetry? And expanding on the work on involutions, Hoskins and Schaffhauser have already considered brains of minimal rank to hyperpolygons for genus zero back in 2019. And so with Steve Ryan, we began by considering families of triple brains through involutions, which would not fit the layout of Hoskin and Schaffhauser. To make sure we are investigating different lines without overlapping, we looked at involutions or actions which weren't allowed in the setup of Hoskin and Schaffhauser. So this is one of the examples we look for. Let me conclude this part of the talk by showing you how it works for this type of brain. And we're still working on the main parts of brains for hyperpolygons that should appear in some paper in the near future. So consider the involution on the space of generalized hyperpolygons, which negates cotangent directions. So this is sigma that I put here that sends x, y, a, b to x minus y, a minus b. This is a very easy involution. And so the fixed point set of this involution is given by precisely the hyperpolygons which have vanishing cotangent directions. In other words, it's precisely the space of generalized polygons of the same length alpha. So by considering the compatibility with the complex structures and the symplectic forms, we can now see that this space is a BAA brain within the space of generalized hyperpolygons. So let me just finish this part by mentioning that in our current project, we are constructing further types of brains of hyperpolygons and studying different dualities that arise through these constructions with the hope of understanding, in particular also, how does Langlands duality for wild Higgs bundles, how can it be understood through generalized hyperpolygons? There are some conjectural statements about how wild Hitchin systems behave under mirror symmetry, and these haven't been very studied from the Hitchin perspective. There is work of, in particular, work of Witten and Gukov, and the recent work of Davide with Witten that make us think that generalized hyperpolygons should be very interesting to understand through this Langlands program for wild Higgs bundles. But let me finish. I have a couple of minutes left. I actually don't know how much time I have left. But just give me a few minutes, just a couple of minutes. Am I okay?
Yeah, you're fine. Sorry, I was trying to unmute myself and I accidentally hit play on my keyboard. You can go for at least another 10 minutes.
Okay,
15 great. If you want.
No, I don't want to entertain you too long. We'll have other interesting things to do, but I want to tell you a little bit more about other things since they've been also keeping my brain entertained, and maybe it will inspire some further research in other areas. So if you have any questions about this, I'll be really happy to answer after the talk or via email, but let me just go into something else too. So what I've been doing in the last few years, I've been also trying to find a way of communicating these Hitchin, the work done in Hitchin systems, integrable systems, Higgs bundles, etc., in words that can be understood by people in other areas, so that we can attract more people to work in here, we can attract grad students to work in the area, etc. So you can see here some of the illustrations I made. One of is the cover of the notices from last year that was Hitchin systems from my article. These are hyperpolygons next that you see in the middle. And the third paper here with Steve Ryan is something that we wrote, in fact, to tell the general public about Hitching systems or Higgs bundles, where we explained that vector bundles were like the hairs of a hedgehog. That's a line bundle of dimension one, and the Higgs field was twisting the hedgehog. And it actually turned out to be a very nice, or what we think it's a very nice article that has attracted many students to email us and try to work in our universities. And so I highly encourage all of you to look at Snapshots of Modern Mathematics, published by Overwolfach, and try to see if you could express your research lines in words along the style of snapshots. Apart from these in my main research area, I've also been working with students a lot. And some of my recent, I've been always interested in pandemics and in viral epidemics, even before COVID. So these are some of the papers that I worked on from ideas that I had just from reading about epidemics and viral structures. So we looked at some point into icosahedral viruses, and we realized that they hadn't been classified mathematically or naturally. So we considered the rules that nature imposed on icosahedral viruses and the mathematics needed for those viruses to exist. So the symmetric impositions, and we were able to classify icosahedral viruses fully. So it's a nice piece of math that actually has allowed people to consider whether certain viruses that we see could exist mathematically can be found in nature or exist already in nature. We also consider epidemic spreads in different types of graphs and different types of cliques. This is further my connection with graph theory that you see appearing in generalized hyperpolygons. I've been very interested in understanding how to use graph theory in other areas. We also consider next with another student a couple of years ago with Rini. She studied how gossips or fake news can spread, and we made a model where we gave different types for each node. We called it a multi-type bootstrap percolation. So it was the first model that allowed for multi-types for each vertex, and hence you would trust or believe a piece of information in a society if it was given to you by two different types of people, so your friends and your family member, and then you would trust it. And imposing these kind of rules, we were able to show that fake news could be contained to some extent. I'm also interested in understanding how other pieces of structures work. So in the bottom, you see how crystals grow. We classified and build a model to see crystals that were plate snowflakes, since a model didn't exist at the time. And more during the pandemic, this pandemic has brought harder times. So we had two kids at home. So we had we have a baby and a toddler. So work has been slowing, and this is one of my first talks actually after maternity. And during the pandemic, I've kept myself entertained partially with my students trying to understand COVID-19. So we have a paper that we published in Nature Scientific Reports this year, where we looked at an age-targeted vaccination strategy. We started back in March last year before vaccines were available. And we studied based on Seattle and the state of Washington's vaccination and COVID cases. We studied how targeting different ages in different ways could help ICU's usage. We also looked with the same student, with Vishal Ram. We looked at the relation between colors and emotions. Very recently, I've been very interested in machine learning and trying to use machine learning to predict behaviors, both in nature and more generally. So we studied the relation between emotions and colors, and how do you relate colors when you feel different emotions. And we learned that if we use data sets from research groups, then we have to put the whole group as co-authors, something that we weren't used to in mathematics. So it's my first paper with so many co-authors that gave us the data sets. And more recently this year, I've been very interested in understanding how cells from different molds, and in particular from Fusarium mold, how cells fuse together. There is a mold that grows very naturally and that is very, very clever, that has memory and can pass information to from cell to cell. And so it's been used a lot in the past to create very interesting and intricate algorithms. So we've been studying this cell, this Fusarium, a unicell organism, and there had not been any models existing that put many of these cells together and they fused in a particular way. So our first paper was on cell fusion through the spine mold dynamic, and that's already on the archive. And the last paper that we're about to put up is about how we can make a Steiner tree algorithm from Fusarium, from these cells interacting with each other. So it's a very different direction, but still it's been very interesting. And finally, some projects that have been in other topics. So in particular, during the pandemic, I've been also working with people in Europe, trying to, this was at the beginning of the pandemic, trying to understand how can we make the most out of the time at home with children, trying to teach at university. So there's an article on that. And I've also had a few articles trying to encourage people to do outreach events to teach young minorities and attract them towards science. And finally, there's a paper there that I'm showing you about phone walkers, something we did with my husband on behavioral science. So we've been always, and we continue to be interested in behavioral science. And just final thing, next year I'm going to be organizing a very big conference, Geometric Structures Reunited, with the hope that the pandemic is kind of over or allowing us to be meet in person at the University of Illinois Chicago. We're going to have mini courses at four very, very good people. We're going to have plenary talks and invited lectures. And we're going to have, and this is going to be a week of very interesting mathematics, not just Hitchings distance, but really is geometric structures, things in geometry and topology, relations to math physics. We're expecting about 100 participants, fully paid, with boat tours of Chicago and activities all around. And so please sign up or share the information with your students if you think they're going to be interested. Thank you very much for listening, and that's all for today.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Are there any questions? I mean, I have a lot of questions about how you did that all at home with kids during the pandemic, but
it's the only way to survive mentally.
Okay. not sure that was my approach. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes one has a brainwave during a talk, but it doesn't really result in any interesting questions.
That's fine. I'm very happy to receive questions afterwards, also via email, because it's always easier.
One thing that you know sort of jumped out at me is, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this Gelfand-Sutton stuff, you know, thinking about that in the context of Nakajima quiver varieties, there's sort of a right, there's this duality on three-dimensional field theories where you can write that T star of flags as the Higgs branch of that field theory, which is what the Nakajima quiver variety is doing. But you can also write it as Coulomb branch. And there, the Gelfand-Sutton subalgebra is the kind of most obvious thing you can come up with. It's the equivariant parameters for coming from the vector multiplet. So have you thought about that connection at all in terms of, you know, is this sort of some hint of how these, you know, generalized hyperpolygon spaces fit into this duality picture?
No, we haven't, but this is a very interesting point that I'm taking note of. Thank you. Yeah, I might ask you about some references to use.
Sure, no problem.
You think that it should be able to be understood in that way?
I mean, that's kind of my free association that, like, right, you're writing that a generalized hyperpolygon space, it's the Higgs branch of a 3D theory coming from you know, this quiver. And, you know, the way that integrable system was presented, if you found mm-hmm. the dual 3D theory as also a gauge theory, mm-hmm. then, you know, you would be writing this generalized hyperpolygon space as a Coulomb branch using this BFN picture, and it would have this integrable system that's kind of built into the BFN story. I have no idea what that gauge theory would be, but, you know, there's sort of some hint in what the integrable system is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know offhand. Maybe somebody else has an idea.
Typically, this generalized star shape quivers mm-hmm. appear as the mirror of, for D theories, compartmental circle, in the sense that, so the Hitchin system description will be pretty much the Coulomb branch description of these branches.
Right. No, that was exactly my point, that like, this type of Hitchin vibration description is like built into the Coulomb, the BFN Coulomb branch picture. But, you know, here you're finding the Hitchin system without at least explicitly writing it as a Coulomb branch.
And you think it should be the same Hitchin system should appear if we go via the Coulomb branch, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Are there any other questions?
So these spaces of generalized hyperpolygons have an integrable system structure. Are you able to say anything about like the fibers of that integrable system? Like, you know, we'd have like a spectral description for Higgs bundles.
No, we can't yet. We're hoping that we're going to see something like that. So because we have these sub-integrable systems, but we haven't tried to do any spectral description. If you remember, for the spectral data for Hitchin systems relies a lot on the complex structure of the Riemann surface.
Yeah.
And we were trying to show that we could get a lot of information without that.
Yep.
But yes, the next step is going to be to try and understand an abelian or non-abelian description of these fibers, etc. I fear we're going to have to rely on the complex structure probably.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for
all right. Well, if there aren't any other questions, then let's thank Laura again.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for coming.